So here's a sentence I didn't think I'd say this season. Why not Bez? Welcome back to Motorsport 101. We both had the same idea for the intro on this one, so my bad. Same brain cell, etc. Welcome to episode 586 of Motorsport 101. I'm your friendly neighborhood host, Dre Harrison. Glad you join us. And we are putting a neat little bow on the triple header that was Day of Classics this past weekend. Probably the final Day of Classics, as we know it, given Monaco's probably going to be moved around next year a little bit. So as we know it, the end of a small era in motorsport coverage. Our Christmas is over on this occasion, but we still had one wildly entertaining, shall we say, Grand Prix of the United Kingdom. I'm not calling it that, by the way. I refuse. Like, I love that they changed the name this year, Cameron, to the Grand Prix of the United Kingdom, but they still hashtagged it the British Grand Prix. What was the fucking point?
they couldn't stick to their own story. I mean, as far as that, like, trading the Monaco Grand Prix in its modern form for a bike racing weekend around Silverstone is like offering me Luka Doncic for anything. Like, wait, that was available? Yes. Yes,
we'll have it. Thank you. Yes. And speaking of which, before I move on as well, happy birthday, my good friend.
Thank you. 28. Knees, I'm taking away your bending for good. I thought that years ago.
Oh, now you've come to collect your pound of cartilage. I see. Okay.
It's humid as hell in New Hampshire today, and every couple hours my knee goes clunk, and I'm like, ah, it's like an old car creaking.
Yeah, just banging knees, just knee on joint on joint action there. Thankfully, hopefully the visual fans of the show will never get to see the gestures I was just doing there as I was recording.
That could be an extra for an additional tier of Patreon, some progress clips from the show.
That was a bit Freudian, shall we say. that would make for some gif. Yes, quite right.
Anyone in the chat get any ideas?
Absolutely not. I refuse. Their membership will be cut short, let me tell you. But we have a lot to talk about here in this MotoGP episode. Marco Bezzecchi shocking the world, a 40-1 winner on Sunday afternoon, and he wasn't even in the top three of wild stories to come out of this weekend, as Fabio Quartararo experiences heartbreak due to his rear right. Not for the first time, I'm saying this about Fabio, the rear right height device didn't want to work. Shocker!
Oh, it worked a little too well. It got stuck on.
Yeah. I'm a huge fan of that. I'm sure most of us in bike racing are. We'll talk about that. Johann Zarco back on the podium. Ducati, arguably the fourth fastest factory this weekend.
What's the line about London buses? You wait for one non-Ducati win, and then you get two with the same. You get two, one right after the other.
Yeah, the phrase is London buses, you wait a long time and then two come along at once. And that's basically what this was. Two non-Ducati wins back to back, which I cannot even think for the last time that happened. So we'll be talking about that. There's chaos reigned at the start of this race as well. So a lot to talk about there. KTM on the plus side, they're safe, which is good news. The bad news is they're still threatening to leave. That's fun. British Grand Prix attendance is mentioned, Jorge Martin, and the latest regarding his statement he put out this morning.
Speaking of star riders and bailing out on their manufacturers.
Oh boy, more on that very briefly. And hey, good news, World Superbike fans. Toprak might be coming to MotoGP. More on that. We chose a good day to record this. If we recorded this on Wednesday, we would have been fucked. Thank God we did this on Thursday instead. We timed this one perfectly. Suck it, journalists. Wait, I am one. Shit. Anyway, places you can
follow. Well, at least you're not a podcaster. Oh, no.
I can't hide that one. No, that one's ugly. Basically, you can fuck with me. We're on youtube.com/motorsport101. We're on facebook.com/motorsport101. We're on Twitter at motorsport_101. And you can follow us on Blue Sky at Dre Harris at thebeastguy.social and cbuckley917 at bsky.social. You can follow RJ at RJ O'Connor as well, but he's not here on this week's episode. He's in Detroit right now for the IndyCar race this weekend on behalf of racer.com. If you see him there, do say hi and tell him you're a big fan of the pod. That would be really, really cool. Yeah, to do that. And because it's Detroit, please pray for it. You can do all of that. You can check out our website, motorsport101.com, where you can read written reviews of all of this weekend's hectic action, including MotoGP's British Grand Prix, Formula One at Monaco, my idea to try and fix it that doesn't involve a bulldozer, and the Indy 500, of course, and a sneak peek at the F1 Academy Netflix documentary if you're into that sort of thing as well. And if you really like us, you can back us financially on Patreon, patreon.com/motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to all of our content. You can upgrade to the $10 tier where you can listen to these episodes live as they're being recorded, as Ghost Raptor and Kira are doing right now. Thank you so much for your continued support. Right, got that out of the way. Let's get into MotoGP's 2025 British Grand Prix. Now, normally I'd have a really well-convenient script reviewing the race on this one, but actually this one's alarmingly straightforward, except that it isn't. We had two starts in this Grand Prix weekend, and one of them was rather startling. To give you a weekend catch-up, Fabio Quartararo qualifies on pole, third straight pole position for Yamaha. First time he's done that since his title-winning year in 2021. We had a sprint where everybody was on soft tyres. Remember this, it becomes important later. And, well, the Yamahas couldn't keep up. Alex Marquez took off, and Marc Marquez's streak of winning every sprint race so far this season finally came to an end. He finished second behind his brother.
Our bikes backwards,
but it's like a reverse forecasting betting, Cam. It still counts if it's the other way around. And in sprints, our bikes is undefeated. We are 7-0, baby. As a collective unit, as a collective front, they are unbeaten. But yeah, it was Alex Marquez finishing on top of that one ahead of his brother. And then for the Grand Prix, it's... Hang on. Maybe pause for a second. This is the case. Cam's background noise kicks in. He's muted himself. But yeah, I'll just wait a second here, folks. May know any good, Cam.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, pretty cool. Fast forward to the Grand Prix on Sunday. And, well, Alex Marquez gets the most perfect hole shot you can possibly imagine. And then he immediately tucks the front and crashes. Quite possibly the fastest MotoGP crash in human history. That was what, Cam, about 7 seconds?
If that, yeah. Taka Nakagami, you no longer hold that record for after he got pole and then just whipped the bike up the road. What was that, 2020?
Oh, God,
extremely rough.
Extremely, I think it was 21, the Catalunya, shall we say, French kiss from behind.
Oh, my God, he's on pole and he's crashed. This was the start of the gods directly into death taxes. Ducati tucks the front. Remember that. It becomes important later.
Extremely important later. Yeah, Alex Marquez tucks the front and crashes after about 7 seconds. Right at the device again, wasn't working properly. Tucks the front, bails down the escape road into Abbey at turn one. Marc Marquez would crash himself into maggots a lap and a half later. He tucks the front due to a huge crosswind he apparently had. There was a 20-mile-an-hour crosswind blowing across that side of the track when it happened. Caught Mark unaware, tucks the front. He goes down, and a red flag is declared. Now, you Dorna-related idiots that in the comments are just saying that this was because they were favouring the Marquez brothers. No, there was a big crash at the end of lap one between Aleix Espargaró and Frankie Morbidelli coming into the final chicane. Espargaró tucks the front, unfortunately collects Morbidelli as a passenger. There's nothing either party could have really done about that one, but Morbidelli's bike did leak oil on the track, so for condition reasons, they threw the red flag. So we got to go again, took a lap off the distance, and everybody gets to restart from their original grid spots because by per MotoGP rules. If the race never gets to lap four, it's like the first start didn't happen. So everybody got to take their spare bikes if they had crashed and were able to go again, basically. Second time round, Fabio Quartararo gets the whole shot and he fucks off. He's got a 2-second lead by the end of lap three. He's on the soft front tire in the medium rear. The soft tire riders were the ones that quickly shuffled up to the front. Fabio was leading the way ahead of Marco Bezzecchi on the very fast Aprilia. He was also on the soft front, while the other runners were shaking themselves out in a bit of a bar fight. Johann Zarco was the one who came through on the Honda into third. Fabio builds up a 5-second lead by lap 12, and we're thinking, well, hang on, Bez is coming back a little bit. We might have an intriguing chase-down situation here. Until lap 14, Fabio Quartararo's rear ride height device is stuck on, and that makes the bike essentially unrideable. Fabio's got to park his bike on the side of the road. He froze himself to the ground in tears and disgust. He's out. And as a result, Marco Bezzecchi gets a clear run, pushes his gap out to 4 seconds over Johann Zarco. Bez for Aprilia. Aprilia gets their first Grand Prix win of the season ahead of Johann Zarco, who has back-to-back Grand Prix podiums in second. And Marc Marquez...
Unk still got it.
And
He's with it.
Indeed, and Marc Marquez just about beats Frankie Morbidelli on the final lap in a photo finish. 17 thousandths of a second between them over the line. But Marc holds on for a podium in third and extends his championship lead over his brother by a couple of points because Alex was down in fifth in the end by the time it was all said and done. I mean, we've got to talk about the top of the running order, Cam. I mean, why not Bez? I mean, when Bez wins a MotoGP round, he wins big. The fun fact, he's never won a Grand Prix by less than 4 seconds. And this is his fourth Grand Prix victory in the top flight.
Yeah, I mean, Aprilia always go well at Silverstone. Mm. This is a track that kind of has an equalizing element to it and that every bike can make lap time a little bit of a different way.
Yeah.
And Aprilia are usually pretty good here. And he was by a mile in a stretch top Aprilia. I have to say, get well soon, Iaguro, with a broken leg. Just had surgery on it. Not the last injury we will talk about on the show.
Indeed. Apparently, though, it was only a very small hairline fracture. Iaguro might be back next weekend at Aragon. That's what they're saying.
Bike races are stupid. Never let anyone tell you different.
Extremely stupid people. Yes.
But yeah, mild hairline fracture, but was out this weekend. Mm. I am sad we did not get the fight at the front because he was one of the fastest bikes on track, just chipping away at Fabio every lap, a tenth here, a couple more tenths there. I don't know if he wins, but I think he does get there in time, and then we would have to see what will have happened. Unfortunately, it didn't happen because Fabio Quartararo has to compete with Scotty McLaughlin for best collapse to the ground in disgust for month of May.
Oh, dear God. I mean, I'll let you in on a little secret. I am admin for the Motorsport Network's MotoGP social page. I was able to get a screenshot of him begging on the ground, like crumpled up in the fetal position, essentially, on the ground after he parked his bike on the Hamilton straight in disgust. The amount of angry responses I had to see on X from pissed off Fabio Quartararo fans of the Everything app, the world's virtual marketplace, and seeing the angry reactions from Fabio fans, Yamaha fans, K-pop fans. Yeah, it's a strange fraternity out there in biking land, but Fabio is a very popular man, and there were some things that were, shall we say, unbroadcastable. And to a degree, I get why, because the people be pissed, to say the least. Yeah, understandably so. And yeah, he cried on the track. You saw his best friend and assistant, Thomas, comfort him, you know, try to motivate him afterwards in real time. We had a side-by-side camera on the timing tower talking about his... So we had to see his brother console him. Well, not his brother, his best friend console him, which was a bit weird. And then he apparently broke down in the media center afterwards, and he was explaining, you know, can you take any solace from this for Yamaha, given how strong you are out there? And I know the outcome is obviously incredibly sad, Cam, but if you're Yamaha, you've got to take something from this weekend, right? I mean, this was, third pole in a row. They've certainly got the speed over a lap now. I think that's hard to argue. But a 5-second lead. Well, one of them certainly does anyway. In the right hands, in Fabio's hands, we know it's great because the man is such a talent. But, I mean, this was looking like a almost surefire win for Fabio. It would have been his first in nearly 3 years. Since Germany 2022 was the last time Fabio Quartararo won a Grand Prix. This is, without question, the nearest he's come since.
In terms of raw pace, yeah, I mean, there is something to take from it. I will say in race trim, this is the first time that they've been able to carry some of that qualifying speed, because it feels like he's slowly turning into Marc Marquez in 2022 and 23, where how was he getting that bike on pole? And then the cartoon anvil lands. And this was another example of that. In this case, not the first big mechanical failure for Yamaha that we've seen from good position for them.
Mm.
But over one lap, they're getting there. The concessions are working. Same with Johann Zarco, who once again he's single-handedly going to drag Honda out of concessions.
Yeah.
By hook or by crook, he's going to drag that manufacturer out. Yeah, Bez was there to pick up the pieces, and then had a healthy gap to everyone behind, and Aprilia, who have looked mid to bad so far this year, then notch a Grand Prix win up.
Yeah, more or less. It's been startling seeing the difference. And yeah, Aprilia, they've not been great, shall we say, to describe the situation this year. I mean, I don't know how much of that is not having Jorge Martin on their bike as a competitive package, but it ain't good, to say the least.
Like, we've seen flashes of raw speed out of Bez a couple of times, but they're usually then countered around with either a crash or just being nowhere all race.
Yeah, most certainly.
And then again, here where it is cold, it is low grip, the Aprilia and all that glorious Aprilia crack, all that aero then comes good here.
Yeah, it softens the pressure on the tire, and what have you always said about Aprilia? They always go extremely well on tracks that are bumpy, low grip, slippery surfaces. That's when the extra downforce means that much more. The extra confidence and the speed, and but we can say a lot about Bez. He's never been slow, to say the least.
No, speed has never been the problem with Marco Bezzecchi.
Right. No, exactly. And well, Bez wins, Aprilia takes their first win of the season, and Massimo Rivera put out a very bold statement you may or may not have seen immediately. I mean, this was minutes on DAZN after Bez wins the race. DAZN, the Spanish broadcasters for MotoGP over there, got Massimo, the Aprilia CEO, and he said the following, and this is a juicy quote given what we now know, which we'll talk about right afterwards, quote, "It's been a difficult period. Not too fortunate since the beginning of the season because of what happened to Jorge. We thought we had done a good job at Noel, we just couldn't show it. We needed this victory. I like to see the glass half full, not half empty. We like the victory. It helps us to see that we have the performance, but not the results. Jorge's is a message that the factory is working hard. We send the message that the bike is ready to win. We want to win with Jorge, and we are waiting for him with open arms. When a rider has so much bad luck, and he's been like this for so long, he's in a condition that none of us are in a position to understand well. We have to have the utmost respect for his situation. We will do everything we can to make him see that this is the place he has to be." I mean,
remember that. It becomes important in a couple minutes.
Yeah. Like, I'm setting this up here because we're recording this on Thursday, May 29th, for full disclosure. Earlier this morning, UK time, Jorge Martin, who, by the way, on the race on Sunday, said on Instagram that, I will reveal my side of the story soon. He did. Very shortly afterwards, and he wrote a lengthy 2-page of A4 statement in regards to this. I won't read all of this out, but there's a couple of key things that I think are absolutely worth pointing out here. I'm just going to find it in one of my notes here that I have in front of me. Right. Okay. In fact, I might just read the whole thing because it's very interesting. Jorge Martin released a statement on his Instagram page this morning in Spanish and English, and he said, and I quote, "At no time have I ever breached the contract. When we signed it, I agreed with Aprilia that if certain circumstances were not met, I reserved the right to decide my future for 2026. This was an essential condition for me to accept the contract proposal they offered me at that time. When I made the decision to change manufacturers last year, one of my premises was to have the possibility to test the bike in real circumstances and to understand the team and its working methodology. In this way, I could feel comfortable signing for 2 years instead of one, and so we included that condition. Faced with the situation of having to make a decision on a date that is established by contract, I have decided to exercise my right to release myself for the 2026 season. I have always done so respectfully, clearly, and with the sole intention of taking control of my future as a professional athlete. I've always been honest with Aprilia. I've always valued the bike, the team, and the efforts of all the people who are part of the project. The only thing I ask is that my will and the spirit of what we agreed at the time of Aprilia be respected. There is no conflict or reproach. I just want to be able to look ahead with clarity after very difficult times and a very serious injury, and to continue to give the best of myself on and off the track." Now, I didn't mention the bit here where he also said he did say that it was basically true that he offered Aprilia a make good to say, hey, we'll have these six races when I get back from injury and then we can reevaluate the situation then. Allegedly, Aprilia did not accept that. In fact, Aprilia, apparently internally, according to my colleagues at the Motorsport Network, have said that essentially because Martin has missed five of the first six races on his contract via injury, they think that clause to exit is null and void. And to just clarify, that clause was if Jorge Martin was not in the top three of the championship by Le Mans, he had the right to leave at the end of the season. So that's the full context, Cam. We've heard both sides of the argument here at this point. Where do you sit on this?
What a mess.
Right.
What a mess this is, because you can't predict what's ended up happening with this season with the injury. But it just feels like the two dumb bitches going exactly. Only instead they're disagreeing. Aprilia is basically begging him to not walk out the door with the statements they were making after the race, and fair enough, they won the race. They have a race-winning bike. Fortunately, the other seat that he is rumored to take also has a race-winning bike, albeit he needs to add a little bit of rain in there with Honda.
Sure.
And Martin is looking at this, well, I don't know what to make of it. It's such a, I can't think of a situation where it's gone this bad this quickly without it being, a situation like Johan Zarco with KTM, where he just wanted out so bad he didn't care how he had to get out.
And even Johan Zarco at least did half a season where he was fully healthy first.
Yeah. We've seen him for 80% of one race still not fully fit on this bike.
Mm-hmm. And
it looks like this relationship is beyond the point of no return.
Well, Martin is apparently claiming that there's no bad feeling, there's no conflict or ill will. My response is, how? You threatened to break off a clause which Aprilia doesn't even think is a real thing. Again,
You put an escape clause in that contract that if I'm not on the championship podium after a couple races, I want out.
Which is where I'm at with all of this. My opinion, generally speaking, on this is Jorge Martin knew exactly what he was doing. And it is not the first time that Jorge Martin has been crafty with the contracts he's signed.
Mm-hmm.
I remember KTM in 2020 when he was riding in Moto2 with the KTM factory team. He put a clause in his contract that said if he wasn't in the top 10 of the championship by the middle of the season, or this certain day, I think it was June 30th, that he could walk away and look to another team and negotiate with them. And that's the year the pandemic happened and MotoGP didn't race until July. And the first race of the year, Martin finished in 20th. He crashed in that race. So Martin basically used the pandemic as a clever way of escaping his contract. So it's not the first time Martin's done something like this. And look, I don't fully blame Martin. Exit clauses in contracts are in MotoGP are very common.
Yep.
This is not a one-shot thing. A lot of places, you know, a lot of teams, a lot of riders will put them in there as get-out-of-jail-free devices, you know, ways of escaping bad deals. It happens. But if you're Jorge Martin, the first question I have to ask him is that if you've put a... I mean, this feels like the NBA draft to a degree. If you've put a top-three protection on the second year of your contract when you signed it, and apparently you put it in that deal at the last minute before the deal was announced, that says to me you don't have full faith in this project.
Of course.
Because that says to me you probably never wanted to leave Ducati in the first place, and you wanted a get-out-of-jail-free card just in case this didn't work out.
Yeah, and let's not forget, Ducati were the ones that ended up spurning him. In that relationship, because they promised him a factory seat twice and pulled it away at the last second twice. One, because he was a mess and they went with Bastianini instead on the full GP22 that was, frankly speaking, not a functional motorcycle. Wasn't really more Martin's fault. And then, well, he won the damn championship last year.
Hmm.
And he was still passed over for Marc Marquez because, well, he's Marc Marquez. That's working out swimmingly for the factory Ducati team. And we'll get to how their weekend went in a minute. But
it's worth mentioning as well, he knew that the GP24 was going to be on every single Ducati he competed against with Aprilia next year. He's not stupid. He knew the lay of the land. He won a world championship on that bike. Arguably the greatest MotoGP bike ever produced. The fact that it is arguably
so good that they have failed to improve it.
Yeah, so good they may have taken this concept as far as it can go, and it has a prime title contender in Alex Marquez right now,
mm-hmm.
who's within a race of the championship lead, and a guy that was never more than a fringe top 10 rider in the series until this year, where he's now an immediate contender and taking the fight to his brother for the first time.
Yeah,
I mean, Alex Marquez is the number two rider in the world right now. There's no arguing that. Like, it's not a fluke anymore that he's up there. It's happening every weekend when the man is competitive, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's the GP24 is a miraculous vehicle. Martin won the title on that bike. He knows how good it is. You know, so putting a top three clause in there says to me he knew exactly what he was doing.
It was a get-out-of-jail-free card. If he did not go to Aprilia and they had immediately a dominant bike, it was a get-out-of-jail-free card. Because the top of this championship, other than Mr. Unk still got it, Johann Zarco, is a wall of Ducati.
It's a wall of Ducati, and everybody else in the top flight right now is locked in. Pecco is locked in. Mark is locked in for 2 years. Every major contender, except Frankie Morbidelli at VR46, who's fourth in the championship right now, is on a 2 year contract, except for Frankie. That's the only Ducati up for grabs potentially next year. And the way Frankie's riding right now, he's going nowhere next year. He's been excellent this season. So the way I see it, Martin. Oh, here's the thing. I'm kind of in two minds about this because on the one hand, Aprilia seemingly to me have been very naive about how they've handled this contract signing. And to be fair, they scrambled to get this done. We've heard the stories. They were scrambling around their legal department. They saw an opportunity to sign Jorge Martin and they grabbed it with both hands. And rightly so. He was the world champion in waiting. But they didn't put an injury clause in the contract. that voids off courses in MotoGP. That seems very naive. And they've allowed Martin to exploit them. And look, at the end of the day, if what Jorge Martin is saying about this clause is true, and I haven't got a reason to disbelieve him, then why did you agree to that clause? And second of all, you had to have known this was a possibility. A good possibility. If there was any doubt that Aprilia was not the number one bike in the field this year, they had to have known they were vulnerable. Unless you thought Jorge Martin was so good, he was going to force his way into title contention on a bike that has shown very little evidence of being that so far this year.
Yeah, and up to this point, other than Le Mans in the rain and this weekend, Ducati has fried this field like Popeye's chicken this year.
Yeah.
There was no outcome where this was all going to look like this fantasy that Aprilia had in their mind.
And if Martin's telling the truth, he's got a legal right to activate the clause in this contract. He's got every obligation to do that if he doesn't want to be there. That's his right as an athlete. He said it himself in his statement. He wants to control his future.
Aprilia can believe that clause is null and void, but if it's not there in writing, he can exercise it.
I don't think this will get to the point where it goes to court. Apparently, Martin's camp doesn't want it to go to court. They feel like they would maybe lose a case. Oriol Puigdemont put a great article about this on motorsport.com talking about it. Yes, my partner on Tank Slappers, the other MotoGP show I happen to host. Do listen if you haven't already.
Shameless plug.
Forgive me. But Martin's camp is not confident if this becomes a legal dispute. Because the dispute would happen in Italy, where Aprilia is based.
Good luck winning that. But at the same time, if you're Aprilia, what's the point in trying to retain a rider who clearly doesn't want to be there?
Yeah, there's nothing good comes with that. Martin wants to be as professional as he can. He's legally obligated to be at Aprilia's all-star event this weekend. Every manufacturer's got these now, and they've got these little, we're going to bring everybody in the factory together for a day of celebrations and races and exhibitions and all of that. It's a pretty all-stars this weekend, and apparently Martin is obligated in his contract to attend. I think that might be quite frosty.
It's going to go down like a lead balloon.
Yeah, good luck to him, man.
Ducati on a soft front tire here.
Oh, boy. Not fun. So, yeah. Good luck to him. And again, we'll have to see how this plays out. But I've got a feeling this is going to get uglier before it gets easier, because both sides have basically established their positions are very, very clear. Aprilia thinks that Martin can't do shit. Martin thinks he's got an exit clause in his contract he wants to activate and leave the team with. So who backs down first? We'll have to wait and see. But it's going to be ugly either way. A certain Ghost Raptor in our chat pointed this out a minute ago as well. 2021, Emilia Romagna and Cota, the last time that Honda had back-to-back Grand Prix podiums, Cam. Johann Zarco is him.
Yeah, this dude is making every other Honda rider worry for their jobs. He has been ridiculous so far, there's no other way to put it. I mean, he was great last year when the bike was unsalvageably poor. And this year, through just sheer money, just resources and testing and more resources and more testing, Honda has turned the RC213V into something they can at least fight with. I mean, the others were kind of floating around back end of the top 10 most of the weekend.
Yeah.
And Zarco is just killing it on the LCR. He has LCR ahead of factory KTM in the standings.
It reminds me of Cal Crutchlow when he was at LCR Honda, and sometimes he was better than some of the factory riders they had at the time.
One of which was Danny Pedrosa.
Yeah. Crutchlow, let's not forget, won a pair of Grand Prix in the wet legitimately as a LCR customer rider and was in the top six of the championship on multiple occasions. That's what Zarco reminds me of right now. He's made it abundantly clear he wants to be on a factory bike next year with Honda.
Why take the downgrade? The factory's in 10th. The factory team is 10th in the standings because Johan Mir can't keep a bike going upright.
No, he finished this one in all fairness.
Oh, boy. Oh, whoa, what a congrats. Oh, good job, buddy.
his second Grand Prix finish of the year so far.
If I speak, I will be banned from the airwaves. I want to move on. LCR is fourth in the team standings right now, only behind...
That's nuts!
Yeah, ahead of KTM, ahead of Yamaha, ahead of Aprilia, ahead of Tech 3.
Fourth in the team standings. And Somakyat Chanter, I think I'm right in saying, hasn't scored a point yet this year.
This is all Zarco.
Jesus Christ.
It's all Zarco is the constructor. He is Matt. He is the Max Verstappen of MotoGP right now.
Yeah, I was literally about to say he's Verstappen-esque right now. He's single-handedly dragging that shit into contention by hook or by crook.
He's second in the championship constructors-wise. Honda now has a healthy gap to Aprilia, and Yamaha has immediately regressed to the mean.
Yep. Back where they started again, because they could have had 25 points off the race this weekend. Instead, they had Jack Miller to thank for salvaging at least a middle of the road finish, at least. Fair play to Miller, was actually decent this weekend on this one. Also, given we're talking about Honda, a sincere get well soon to Luca Marini, who, this is a quick story, horrible news coming out of Suzuka. He was over there testing for the 8 hours this weekend as part of a potential Honda setup. Then they're not going to go with him now. Obviously, they weren't going to anyway. They've got to have a team of... he's too big for the Fireblade at this point. And they've got to have Takahashi, Laika Lukwona, and Johan Zarco. It will be there for the Honda team.
There's a murderer's row of Suzuka specialists.
Ooh, that's a nice little set of riders Honda have got there for the Suzuka 8 hours.
Worked out real well last year for them.
Indeed.
Unfortunately, Marini still wanted to finish the test out to give Honda as much data as they could get. And he
Goodwill gesture.
It was a goodwill gesture, and fair enough, he's been doing the job over in MotoGP this year, just getting a little better every weekend. And he high-sided it at turn one.
Yeah.
At Suzuka. And if you know Suzuka, there are not many places worse on Earth that you could crash a motorcycle than turn one at Suzuka. It is fast. There's not a lot of runoff.
Yeah, exactly. It's about as bad as you can get for a biking track that we race around regularly, not named Macau, quite frankly. Mm-hmm. As bad as it gets. The list of injuries were extensive on this one, including a broken collarbone, a dislocated hip, and a pneumothorax. So yeah, punctured lung as well. So second time we've had to say that to describe a rider's condition this year. That's two more than I'd like, quite frankly. So yeah, horrible, horrible incident on that one. And but luckily he's in hospital. He gave a thumbs up on his Instagram page.
Basically, the eyelid bitch pose.
The eyelid bitch pose, saying thanks for all your support. We'll see you soon. So he's almost certainly going to be staying out there in Japan for a little while he recovers. Again, best wishes to Luca on that one. And I mean, let's not beat around the bush here. A guy that's been riding very, very well is probably about to lose his seat in MotoGP, almost certainly to Luca Marini. Sorry, to Jorge Martin at Honda. Given we all know Honda are interested, it's going to be a matter of can they clean up this legal dispute with his own team. Such a raw deal for Luca, who's been a consummate professional at Honda and has had some good performances with them. Just being a solid, stable base guy for them, and has gone out of his way to try and make Honda's life a little bit easier by taking this Cessna, and now he's horribly injured himself and is going to miss significant time. Taka Nakagami will be filling in the meantime. But of course, from all of us here, best wishes to Luca and wish him a very speedy recovery on that one. Ducati, arguably the fourth best factory this weekend.
Yeah. No feel through the front of the bike all the way around the lap. They could not tell what it was doing. And if the destroyer of worlds, that is the Decima Sedici GP24/24.5/25/24.973. If it has one problem, it is the front end is a little bit numb because it is a bike that makes the lap time, well, frankly, everywhere, but mostly through the rear tire.
Mm.
And they couldn't tell what the front of the bike was doing. Pecco Bagnaia, who, by the way, how many points in the last two weekends?
Four.
He's not beating the allegations. It is not good.
He is now
significant.
He's 72 points behind Mar Marquez in the championship now. Title-wise, he's effectively cooked. He's two weekends back already. Full weekends back, including the sprint. He's basically two weekends back.
Yeah,
and we've only had seven.
Yeah, and the thing is, the way Mark is racking up sprint sprint podiums. Is he going to drop that for the rest of the year from the weekends? Because he's almost always going to score at least eight to 10 points.
Yeah.
Just as a matter of fact. They were good in the sprint. They were just messy in the race. Mark dumped the bike. Alex dumps the bike instantly. Deco dumped the bike. And otherwise, they weren't that fast.
Yeah, Marquez found a little bit of pace in the middle period of that race of stability to get back up to third, and he was chasing down Zarco a little bit here and there at the end. But again, Mark made a couple of near misses at the end, and that allowed Frankie Morbidelli to catch up, and he had the fantastic final lap fight between them for third. That was a bar fight between two mad monsters.
Ritual combat.
It was John Wick. It was a duel over 30 paces.
Shooting at each other with silenced pistols while walking through the mall.
Exactly. ridiculous stuff from the pair of them there. Mark just winning that one between two mad bastards, as I quite like to describe them as. Yeah, absolutely crazy scenes. And yeah, I think Cam's got it in one. I mean, Bagnaia, after the race, I saw it in Matt Oxley's brilliant column he usually has on Motorsport Magazine. I used my one free article for the month on him. It's well worth it.
Just use the private browser.
Exactly. But basically, he's saying that he could not tell the difference between the medium and the soft front, which is ungood, to say the least. No front end feeling whatsoever as a result of that.
For a rider as sensitive as Pecco is, and he would tell you that he is, and that's what makes him so good at, you know, giving feedback and helping develop the motorcycle. This bike is his baby. For him to not be able to tell the difference between a soft and a medium is extremely concerning.
Yeah, that's a big problem. You can't give feedback properly if that's happening.
Yeah, it's like Valentino when he first tested the Ducati and it had that carbon steering head that just dampened the front end. It's like, it doesn't matter what I change, the bike just rides the same. Nothing fixes it.
Exactly.
Now let's not overstate this. This is still the GP24 point whatever, and it's still the overwhelmingly dominant bike of the championship. But I do wonder, legitimately at this point, did they misstep with the 25?
You have to wonder, did they get too cute? I mean, people have been asking Pecco all year, can you revert back to the 24? The answer to that is no. And the reason why is because the engine mount is in a different position on the 25 version of this bike, and they can't go back to that on the engine. So as a result of that, they are stuck with this concept of and this version of the bike for the rest of the year. And I do wonder, it's the old phrase, can you improve upon perfection? Did they get too radical with the 24 as a concept? And then when they went to this 25, they tested it out in Sepang and it didn't quite work out. And this is now a Frankenstein's monster of different parts and setups from the 2 years and the two versions of the same bike.
It's basically what it is.
Yeah.
Is it's the 25 frame and the engine block with the mounts. And then it's the internals of the 24 engine and the aero of the 24. And so, and they've been adjusting the rear seat aero because that's not homologated. You can do whatever you want on the tail unit of the bike. But I do want, it hasn't crippled the bike.
No.
But it does
still fast.
It is still fast as anything. It's still in terms of raw speed, it's still probably better than the 24. But it's not as universal a tool. It's like going from the Red Bull RB19 to the 20, where if it was in the window, the 20 was smashing the field to pieces to start the year.
but it wasn't the 19 where just everywhere we went, they would just blow everyone away.
Right.
It takes more tweaking than that. And in the same breath, Mark, we know, because we've watched his entire career, can kind of just get up on the handlebars and blunt force trauma a bike into doing what he wants it to do.
Yeah.
But often with a Ducati, if he tries to do what he did on the Honda, which was make the bike work, the bike will just spit him down. And Pecco is just, he just crashes and he doesn't know why, because the bike doesn't tell him anything.
Yeah, it's he's not.
He goes over the limit without knowing that he's gone over the limit.
Yeah, if Bagnaia said he could take one thing from the weekend, it was he can actually take a little bit of solace that this was the first weekend when Mark genuinely spoke out about how this bike had problems too, and that they might be able to work together to figure this out. I think they will. Ducati have got limitless resources, and they know how to build a motorcycle.
They've got a technical murderer's row in that garage. It's just Gigi Dolin.
Yeah, I think they will eventually figure this out, and I think they will start to gap Alex Marquez in the back half of the year once they start figuring out how to develop.
Remember the 23.
Yeah, the 23 and the 22. Once they started to figure it out, the lap time just got quicker and quicker, and the rest of the field who can't develop what they've got could not keep up.
Remember the start of last year, like the GP24 was a little bit iffy. They figured out the rear tire chatter, and like the floodgates opened.
Yeah. Yeah. It was an onslaught. That's what led to them winning 22 consecutive Grand Prix up until Le Mans this year. Once they figured it out, they were literally unstoppable. It took an act of God to beat Ducati at Le Mans earlier this year.
Old man Honda upstairs called in a favor.
just throw a lightning bolt.
Maintain my record, and my life is yours.
You tell him, Kratos.
But yeah, like
drifting boy.
I would expect normal service to resume next time out. But again, another crack in the armor.
Yes, Ducati are vulnerable. There is no getting around it. In high tire wear tracks and high tire wear scenarios, they are legitimately beatable. There is no getting around it. They were arguably fourth quickest of the factory teams at this race, given they were legitimately beaten by an Aprilia, a Honda, and what probably should have been a Yamaha as well. Yeah, they had a soft that couldn't work with their bike, and they had a medium that they couldn't get heat into. Not a good combination at all. KTM worth talking about here as well. Okay, this is a good news, bad news situation. Good news, you're probably safe financially. Bajaj Auto have purchased, I think it's 75%.
Yes, majority control. They are now the controlling stakeholder.
They own 49.9%. They now own a majority stake at 75%. I think they also have the option to buy out the rest at a later date if need be. It's a 600 million euro debt restructuring deal, essentially, which will keep the team afloat. Obviously, great news. Delighted. Yeah,
they are safe. Like, the company is safe.
Yes. It's a new era. They are safe, at the least in the interim, and Bajaj have said openly they are committed to making KTM a successful project. Fingers crossed they hold up on that, and fingers crossed that the people that are in there still have their jobs. This is objectively good news. No doubt about it. The bad news is your star rider's thinking about quitting. Pedro Acosta was scathing after the British Grand Prix. He was big mad, to say the least. On that one, he was not happy. All of the KTMs really struggled.
Ducati were the fourth best manufacturer. They were still in range. KTM were they were not in the same class of motorcycle as everyone else. No. This weekend, they were just. You could visibly see the rear tire bouncing through some of the long turns, just bouncing and chattering up the road. And until a couple days ago, they had no money, no resources to fix it because, well, they were on their death, in their death throes as a company.
Indeed. And
when you look at that, when the pace of development is what it is in top flight prototype motorsport, having to take a few months off, that is going to cascade throughout the next probably year, year and a half.
The problem is, as well, is that there was some genuine hope in that camp because Maverick Viñales was stringing together some really solid results for them. It looked like they may have made a breakthrough.
Hold off. What do we say every time KTM thinks they made a breakthrough?
They end up going two steps backwards again.
Exactly. Because every time they take a step forward, we think, oh, they're pretty good. And then they put the bike on a track with similar characteristics to where they were good, and they have no idea how to set it up.
Yeah, it was Maverick is such an enigma.
Yeah. Even in the sport for almost a decade, and the overriding trait of the KTM has always been the same. Inconsistency.
Andrea Bastianini after the race said, and I quote, "I'm the worst rider on the track. KTM needs to do something for me because like this, it's impossible to continue." Pedro Acosta was even more scathing when he said, and I quote, "I don't accept the situation, and I don't have patience. I won't wait forever to be world champion. I need help from the factory." Allegedly, behind the scenes, Acosta has told KTM, "You better bring something significant to the test after Aragon next weekend, or else."
Does that mean he's not coming on, then?
That means he's not coming on, Cam.
Well, I no real ambiguity in either of those statements now, is there?
No, none whatsoever. Absolutely scathing. Acosta's made it abundantly clear to KTM, he's going to think about trying to break his contract if this keeps up for the rest of the season. And we already know he has a €6 million buyout clause in his contract. Not good. At all. So, good luck there, KTM. I hope you can figure that shit out, because it's not great.
We're saved. We're doomed.
We're dead. Again. Also, a couple of things to point out as well here. Attendance, British Grand Prix. Oh, boy. 40,000 on race day. Only 99,000 for the weekend, Cam. Formula One gets more on Thursday.
And it's not like the British don't love their bikes.
We know it's the potential of this market. Extremely
concerning.
Yeah. They moved the Grand Prix to May this year, specifically thinking this would be a good time slot for it, you know, just before the kids break up on holiday for half term school wise in the UK. We get a week off in between terms. I think that was a bad idea because they dropped this Grand Prix in the middle of a lot of busy shit. For added context, as Cam probably doesn't know all of this, you've got the Monaco Grand Prix, the Indy 500, that happens the same weekend. A lot of people will probably be starting to make their pilgrimage to the Isle of Man because the Isle of Man TT races start this week. They're going on as we speak right now as we record this. It's also last weekend of the Premier League soccer in this country, as well as the playoffs in the lower leagues. So teams are going to Wembley to watch their team potentially get promoted up to the next division. There was a lot of big sporting events going on, and we've talked about the other stuff before. Lack of a British rider in MotoGP's Premier Class. It's a £31 a month premium channel in the UK to watch this sport. Yes, the British Grand Prix is on free-to-air, and that would actually probably convince a few people to probably stay at home and watch it because they know they can get it for free rather than paying a boatload of cash for it. And TNT doesn't do a very good job of promoting bikes on their network. They bundle it in with all the other cycling and other motorsport series like British, World Superbike, Speedway, etc. as part of their overall package, but not MotoGP specifically. Raptor, in the chat, mentions Silverstone isn't fun to travel to. It's not, but it doesn't stop 150,000 rolling up for Formula One race day. It's not an excuse. Yeah,
Yeah, no, absolutely not. No, you pick a fight with every sporting event currently available to pick a fight with.
You will not beat
football. They are the smallest fish in that pond.
100%.
If it's motorsport, you're probably preparing for the Indy 500 or Monaco or the Coke 600. I happen to watch all of it because I'm a sicko.
Absolutely.
Look. The low-hanging fruit and the casual viewers they're gonna watch something else because everything else is happening. And unless you throw the house at promoting it, if you dump everything into promoting it, you're just not gonna get the fish biting.
It doesn't help that we don't have a British rider in the Premier class. Jake Dixon is the nearest we have. He's a good Moto2 racer. He's not an elite Moto2 racer.
MotoGP teams aren't calling him.
No. This is year 7 of Jake Dixon in Moto2. It's not happening. He's in his early 30s now, and he's not going to be the top option to get a MotoGP seat over someone like a Manuel Gonzalez or an Aaron Canet or potentially some more raw prospects like Danny Holgado or David Alonso. Dixon is not going to be that guy. And if you ignore Dixon, there is no one. There is no British talent that is anywhere near a MotoGP seat right now. You're talking like people like Eddie O'Shea in Moto3, who's a backmarker under Michael Laverty's team. When Michael Laverty and Neil Hodgson are talking to us at the Motorsport Network saying the next British MotoGP rider is at least 5 years away, and I think Laverty was optimistic to say 5 years away. Like, we're not the next Barry, like, to quote a man that Cal know very well, like, to describe this situation, Bradley Smith's not walking through that door. Cal Crutchlow is not walking through that door. Barry Sheen is not walking through that door.
No.
And I don't need to be Rick Pitino to point that out. So when you factor all of this in, this was a failure. Now, don't get me wrong. They only got 42,000 on race day last year. So it was the fact that people didn't. I suspect what's happened here is that a lot of people picked up tickets last minute just for Sunday to roll up on the cheap because they had plenty of seats available on Sunday and they probably just thought last minute, fuck it, we'll go to Silverstone and watch the Grand Prix. Probably for peanuts. But less than 100,000 over the weekend when France had 106,000 on Saturday is laughable.
Yeah, and it's not like the love for the biking is particularly different. Another drop, another in the trend of drops, but it didn't affect France. They love their motorcycles.
They love their bikes, and Britain loves their bikes.
They have two local heroes to root for. One of them won the damn race.
Exactly. I'd argue Britain is MotoGP's third biggest market outside of Spain and Italy. The potential is there. The Brits get behind their own. I grew up with Carl Fogarty. I grew up with Cal Crutchlow. They adopted Valentino Rossi like he was basically one of us. You go to any biking event in the country, there's going to be a sea of blue and yellow no matter where you go because people adored Valentino. The potential for a British Grand Prix audience is huge, but for many, many reasons, it's not happening anytime soon. And that's unfortunate because it's a good market. It deserves to have a Grand Prix. Silverstone, by the way, it's worth pointing out, the racing here is superb. It really, all three races.
What's better, Phillip Island?
That's about it. Yeah. It's the second best, in my opinion, all-round Grand Prix facility in the world. I think, for just bike racing, I think only Phillip Island is better. I say that with full sincerity. It's a top tier track for bike racing, and all three races this weekend absolutely slapped.
The Moto2 race might have been the fringe contender for race of the year.
It's the first 10 I've given out all year. The Moto2 race was incredible. Like, it was a five-way fight between David Alonso, Aaron Canet, Senna Regis, Diego Moreira, Andy Zangavara, and they beat the piss out of each other for the entire race. Start to finish, it was incredible. And even Moto3, Jose Antonio Rueda going from the back of the grid to win on the final corner incredible drama. All three races were at least an 8 out of 10. The Moto 3 was a 9 out of 10. The Moto 2 was a 10, in my opinion. Like, and
yeah.
But low-key, by the way, Jose Antonio Rueda, 5 wins out of 7 in Moto 3 this season. Are we getting Alonso 2 right here? That could be quite the force. Just before we get out of here as well, we've got a bit of breaking news towards the end of the day's run in here, news-wise, in the cycle, because Kenan Sofoglu has been talking to the Turkish media. He claims that his star rider, Toprak Razgatlioglu, has signed a deal that will, quote, make everybody happy. Swincy has reported, and David Emmett's backed this up, it looks like Toprak Razgatlioglu is coming to MotoGP in 2026 with Pramac. Wowee.
And every Ducati rider in World Superbike is like, oh, finally.
Nicolo Boudica just rubs his hands like Birdman. The evil is defeated.
check on your brother for me.
Oh, well, my man was like, oh, he's a bitch. I can't stand him because he doesn't like the fact that Toprak's quitting, essentially, to go to MotoGP. Bollocks, quite frankly. Look, I don't know how good Toprak is going to be. He's going to be 29 years old next year, joining a MotoGP team for the first time and one that needs a lot of development help. It's not where he needs to be. But if nothing else, it will be fun.
Oh, he's going to try and threshold break on a Michelin front tire, and he's going to have the meanest low side in biking history.
It's like that movie, There Will Be Blood. And it's going to be fascinating. Like, this is a dream move. Like, for anyone who doesn't watch World Superbikes, Toprak Razgatlioglu is an incredible superbike rider, one of the greatest of all time, in my opinion.
He is like arguably as box office as prime Mark on a Honda was. The way rides a BMW is psychotic.
Oh, he's fucking incredible. He is, like, he won, what was it, 17 World Superbike races last year for BMW? He is a freak. He's the most uniquely gifted and talented rider that World Superbikes maybe has ever seen, quite frankly. So him,
between him and Ray, like, it's those two, and just it's the visible just abuse of his tires while still remaining fast that makes him incredibly fun to watch. I mean, he won that championship last year, and he had to miss a couple rounds due to injury, due to a badly designed crash structure with the wall.
Yeah, man.
He was lucky to be alive. He came back and was still just boots to asses as soon as he came back.
Look, it's nice to see that someone is still believing in World Superbikes enough to give one of its riders an opportunity. That's how it should be, in my opinion. And I'm glad we're seeing someone as talented as Toprak get this opportunity. It's who wins? The fans. Quite frankly, and yes. I'm delighted for him, and I really can't wait to see how he gets on a Pramac Yamaha. It's going to be fascinating, and I'm glad that Yamaha has given him a second chance after the whole testing fiasco of a few years ago didn't really work out. So, going to be fascinating to see how that goes. I cannot wait. Man, we've done over an hour on this episode and a lot of fun stuff on the bikes this time around. So we're going to get out of here. Thank you very much for listening. We'll return with the Grand Prix of Aragon in just over a week's time. The next Sunday, there's going to be a test as well after that. So we'll get some insight on that as well. But hey, anti-clockwise Aragon track. Mark Marquez, anyone? Until next time.
God have mercy upon you, because Mark Marquez will not.
Until next time, I'm Andre Harrison. They've been Cam Buckley. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll catch you guys next time. Sayonara.
Bez and Zarco 1-2. It's got to be somebody's bikes.
Their bikes? Our bikes?
Someone's bikes.
The people? Someone's bikes.
The people's bikes.
The people's bikes. Yeah.